Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonantoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome into the Lombardi Line on a Tuesday. So much going on in the world of sports, coming off yesterday's sports equinox. Today, happy Halloween, happy selection committee reveal day, happy NFL trade deadline. We are just 3 hours away from that cutoff. A couple moves have been made, not too many just yet. Montez Sweat to the Bears for a second this morning, Leonard Williams to the Seahawks yesterday. We'll dive into those in a little bit, as well as keeping you updated on anything that comes to fruition over the course of the next 2 hours. But as we welcome you today alongside Michael Lombardi, Stormy Bonantoni with you. Michael, leave it to the NBA to upstage the NFL on trade deadline day. Your boy James Harden officially going to the Clippers.
Well, I mean, it had to happen, right? I mean, it had to happen. I woke up to it this morning. I was delighted. I was so happy to see it. You know, I don't know how that other second round pick. I'm still trying to tally up what we actually got for Ben Simmons, because this counts into it too, right? So, look, I think the key element to the deal was cap flexibility. You know, this KJ Martin kid that the Clippers traded 2 second-round picks for is a really good wing along with Batum. So they welcome Covington back home. Marcus Morris is a North Philly kid. So, look, it just, you know, you get rid of this problem that was lingering on. The bench depth will be really good. Obviously, like most things in the NBA, that's what's the next move. And for the Clippers, I mean, look, you know, once Man got hurt, I think they were kind of in a position that perhaps they needed to do something. And, you know, and it gives them it solves one of their biggest problems. Now, how Westbrook, how George, Kawhi Leonard all work together, I don't know. I posted this morning. Like, what's the over-under on the three of those guys being able to stay in the same game? Because, you know, Kawhi could call in and say he's not playing for 10 days, right? Mm-hmm. And there could be rest for George. Harden, at least, I mean, I felt like Harden tried to play almost every game for the Sixers. So I didn't think he was in the load management as much as anybody. But his skill set is declining. So I was actually happy he's gone. I know who's not happy. I know who's not happy, Stormy.
Who's that?
All the casinos in Atlantic City, because he helped that revenue down there. He was down there quite a bit. He was a player.
Oh.
Now I'm sure Vegas, you know, it's a quick hop and a skip and a jump from LA. So, I would buy stock in some of them.
Yeah, he'll be making his way down here, Michael. We do know that much. For those of you that are watching on YouTube TV or on VSiN, you saw the layout. But for our radio audience, this is a trade that involves 7 players, 4 draft picks and a pick swap. So Harden and 2 others, PJ Tucker and Filip Petrušev, go to the Clippers. Philly gets the 4 veterans. Michael referenced Marcus Morris, Nicholas Batum, Robert Covington, KJ Morton, 2 firsts, 2 seconds and a future pick swap. As far as the title odds go, Clippers in the preseason were 22-1, now around 12-1. And I agree that, like, he should make a difference. Obviously, he's a great point producing guy in the regular season. But as far as like the postseason and winning a championship, I still think that this team is just going to go as far as Kawhi Leonard will take them. And that is all about health. And if he hasn't been able to do that yet, and he's like my favorite player in the NBA, Michael, Kawhi Leonard is San Diego State grad. But I just don't think that odds movement is... I think it's a little bit much, personally, to go all the way down to 12-1. You say what's the over-under on them all being on the floor at the same time. I say what's the over-under on the amount of time that James Harden decides that he's going to go somewhere else. Because it's just like every year or so, right? Houston to the Nets, Nets to the Sixers, Sixers to the Clippers. I mean, where's next? Magic, maybe?
I mean, how about when, you know, he can't get his game going and the ball's not coming to him? And, you know, like, seriously, I feel bad for Ty Lue. I mean... Look, they had to make the move. We'll see if it goes. I mean, for the Sixers, they've got a ton of cap room next year. You know, they've got these extra picks. You know, they waived Danny Green, which I thought was, I watched him play in the first 3 games of the year, and I'm wondering, like, what's he doing on the court? Like, as Parcells would often say, that's just stopping progress. And when you play an older player that's kind of at the end, I feel bad. He was a great guy, but no more. So it gives them some athleticism. And look, they're not moving anywhere. I found it fascinating that people actually think the Clippers are moving up the ladder. Like, I just saw like a statistical analysis that have the Clippers winning the West ahead of the Nuggets. Are you kidding me?
No, and Michael, I'm not even a big NBA person, and I shake my head like that's, I don't feel like that is realistic. But neither here nor there. Place your money where you want to place it. That's not my job to judge. But okay, Michael, great stuff in the NBA. This is an NFL show, and it is the NFL trade deadline. So we talked about the big blockbuster, which was necessary, and I know you're devastated to see James Harden go after all of the wonderful things that he did for the 76ers. Yeah,
I'm so devastated. It goes back to what makes me so angry about Harden is that all they cared about was trading for Harden. Look, Simmons had to go, right? Simmons had to go. It was like, you know, in the scene in The Sopranos when all sitting around the table and they find out what's going on with Vito and they say, he's got to go, right? Well, he had to go. Simmons had to go. After not taking the dunk against Atlanta, you got to go, right? But I wanted to open the floor. Like, he wanted to go anywhere. He wasn't telling you where to go. You could have traded him for as much as you wanted, but yet you had to have Harden. That's what makes me crazy. That's what drives me nuts, is because you back yourself into this biased corner that you're going to create the Houston Rockets from 5 years ago. Of course, they're doing that out in Los Angeles now. So for me, that's where I get sore. I don't mind Harden as a person. I mean, I don't like his competitiveness. I don't like how he quits on teams. But it didn't bother. He wasn't the cause of my consternation. It was more about how we just limited ourselves to this one player, and it was stupid.
Yeah, well, hopefully now you have, like you mentioned, some added assets here and get some things to continue to build around Joel Embiid and go from there. But Harden, yeah, well, definitely he's
well,
not
once
gonna...
he runs from the, once he runs from the top of the three to the other top of the three, we'll be good. We're all good. But don't worry, Stormy.
Hey, the conditioning, I thought it was going to get better, Michael. Well, just, I'll leave it
Come
at
on.
That.
It
I'll
has
leave
never
it at
gotten
that.
Better.
As far as the NFL trade deadline, before we came on air about a half an hour, 45 minutes ago, the Commanders and Bears agreed to a trade that's expected to send defensive end Montez Sweat to Chicago for a 2024 second round pick. Sweat is in his last year of his contract, and the Commanders opting for a draft pick now. Chicago beefs up its line. And this is something that we talked about yesterday, Michael, that the Commanders were going to have to choose at least between Montez Sweat and Chase Young. Couldn't keep them both after this year. At least they get something in return versus giving him up for nothing. Ian Rappaport also reporting the Commanders are taking calls on Young as well. So maybe it's just fire sale time in Washington.
Why not? I mean, they're one of the worst defenses in the league with them.
Yeah.
Right? They're one of the worst and they have two of the highest paid defensive tackles in football. So, like, where are we going? I mean, we have these two guys. Everybody thinks, oh my God, we got their great players. Well, if they were so great, why is Washington so bad? Look, the Sweat deal to me just blew me away. I mean, I'm tired of typing for Twitter. I can't wait to talk about it, right? So, Stormy, when you're getting ready to make a trade, and I've made a lot of bad ones, so I'm saying this from experience, right? I'm not saying this that I have all the answers, but I actually have more experience than Ryan Poles, who has now been a disaster at the trade deadline. Like, I wish I was in the league to call Ryan Poles on the phone. Because he obviously doesn't think twice, right? He doesn't measure twice, cut once. So let's go through it. You're making a trade. I'm going to trade with you. You have to back away from the deal and say, what's my safety margin on this trade? Like, what happens if this happens? If I give Deshaun Watson a guaranteed contract for 5 years and he's no good, what happens? If I give him a guaranteed contract for 5 years and he's below average, what happens? You got to answer all those questions. You do the same thing as your team. So you've got three kind of teams, right? You've got teams that are not really competing for a playoff spot. You've got marginal playoff teams, and you've got teams that have aspirations to win a Super Bowl. And in each category, they're a little bit different. Well, the Bears are in the last category. They're not competing for anything. They're competing for a top 10 pick. So you give away the most prized possession that you could possibly give away, which is a second round pick. They are like gold. They are gold. I would not give away a second round pick. As much as I love Bella, my dog, if somebody wants Bella or a second round pick, Bella might have to go. She might have to go. I hate to do it, but she might have to go. Like, there's no way I'm giving up a second round pick to anybody. To anybody. And he goes and gives two. Why? You say, why would I not do? They're cheap. And the same player you pick at 16, there's a good chance you're getting at 33. So the quality is the same, fairly the same. The fans don't see that, but the players graded pretty much the same. And this guy turns around and gives an economic value to a player he's going to have to franchise to sign. Like, it makes no sense. 8 games from now, I could sign him with as much cash as I put in front of him, and it doesn't cost me anything but the owner's money. Like, explain why this is a good trade.
That last part, honestly, was something I wasn't even taking into account. I was looking more just surface level, that if I'm the Bears and as bad as I am, why am I giving up a premium asset for a non-premium player? That was like essentially all that I thought of when it came in. But that's an excellent point, that looking ahead to next year, you're obviously going to have to sign him for the long term and at what cost, and you're giving up something that's critical to building the future of your success. And granted, at least I do know, they have Carolina's pick next year, right? They're going to have 2 first round picks, but those seconds are prized possessions.
You can't get rid of them. You don't want to ever trade them. Like, you don't want to trade them. They could have easily, you know, because they have Carolina's one, right? Because they have Carolina's one, they could have taken their one and traded it down to somebody who might want to come up right now. You could make a trade now, and you could have picked up a bunch of assets and then trade those assets away. Like, you can't just think linear. You got to think outside the box. Like, this is all about, and I've seen it in my whole time in my career, well, if we get Sweat, we'll be a better team. No, you won't. You're not a good team. You don't play from in front. He's never going to be able to rush the passer. You know, they're going to slide the protection to him. Like, great. You can't defend the forward pass.
Michael, we'll continue to roll through the latest on this NFL trade deadline news and injury updates as well. It is Halloween, so we have a number of spooky segments that are lined up. Was Jimmy Garoppolo seeing ghosts yesterday? We'll recap Monday Night Football in a moment. We've also got some scary good insight on college football coming from VSiN's own Aaron Moore in hour 2. We're just getting started here on the Lombardi Line. All treats, no tricks. Keep it locked right here.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
It's football season, and the GM Shuffle podcast is a must-listen for every football fan. Hear our guy, Michael Lombardi, give his unfiltered opinion on players, teams, coaching decisions every Monday and Thursday throughout the entire football season. You can download and subscribe to the GM Shuffle podcast from VSiN and DraftKings today, wherever you get your podcast. A fresh new episode just came out yesterday. And Michael, as we were breaking down the Washington Commanders and Chicago Bears trade of Montez Sweat, I was just laughing, scrolling through your Twitter feed because you were getting hot. Add more fuel to the dumbest trade. Sweat's agent has all the leverage. Not 99.9% of leverage. All the leverage, 100%. He should never answer the Bears' calls. There's nothing to say other than all caps, show me the money, plus 25%. That just made my day.
Maybe more than 25%. Like, why would you even call back? You know, Ryan Poles, we'd like to do an extension with Sweat while he's here. Why? Why would I do one? You know, why would I do one? I'm going to be a free agent. You franchise me. You pay me like a quarterback. They franchise me 2 years. Okay. If you pay me the franchise number over 3 years with X amount of guaranteed, I'll think about it. Like, you're done. You're not negotiating. You're taking a demand. But you had to think about this when you traded for him. Like, you're giving up a high asset. The reason Washington did this is only because this was a ridiculous trade in their favor. It was a ridiculous trade in their favor.
Yep.
And so it allowed them to get away with whatever they wanted to get away with. And it was perfect for them. I mean, you know, look, they don't care. You know, I mean, they're a bad defense with them. What do they care if they don't have them? Same thing with Chase Young. Chase Young's a media darling. Everybody in the media loves Chase Young because he's a second pick overall in the draft. Oh, my God, we're playing. He doesn't get to the quarterback. He runs past them 90% of the time.
And again, as Ian Rappaport reported a little bit ago, Chase Young, also a player that they are taking calls on in Washington. And it seems like, I mean, obviously Ron Rivera, a defensive minded guy. Now you're offloading these defensive stars from your team. The writing on the wall certainly seems to be there for Rivera with this new ownership, that this is the final run for Riverboat Ron out there in Washington. Another player that's been in the news over the last 24 hours is, wouldn't he get traded from the Raiders, Devontae Adams. Michael, coming off the Monday Night Football game, 1 catch on 7 targets for Devontae Adams, 11 yards. What was going on with Jimmy Garoppolo yesterday from your perspective?
You know, look, you know, I know my son works there and everybody thinks I don't touch the Raiders. Look, you know, it wasn't good last night. Look, I'm fully vested and I wish somebody would had their own son watch on that. It's not an easy watch for you when the team doesn't play well. And I'm not blaming one player because he blamed himself. I mean, Jimmy Garoppolo wasn't good. I mean, you know, for all the I love how these people get on Twitter and say, well, he had one target for 17 yards. Okay. Well, he's wide open twice. Not a little open, like wide open, like high school open. Mm. And Jimmy can't get him the ball. Now, I think Jimmy's been hit way too much. I think Jimmy's gun shy. I think he's worried about his lower body. You can watch his mechanics. You can watch how quick he's just trying to get rid of the ball, throw it out there. Like the interception off the turnover, pre-snap, it's cover two. Right? You know it's two from pre-snap. I yelled it to Big Daddy on the couch. They're playing two here. I thought they were going to run it. And he throws it, and it gets picked off. It's not even a good interception. Like, it was a horrendous throw. I mean, look, for all the problems of the Raiders, you know, the bigger issue is they haven't been able to get good quarterbacking play the last 2 years. I mean, that's just a fact. They've been in a lot of close games. They can't get that done. It's on them.
Yeah.
They traded out Carr for Garoppolo. Okay. And Garoppolo has played less than Carr played for him, and Carr wasn't good enough. So they've taken a step backwards, and that's what happens. And usually when that does happen, not many people get to stick around, and it's unfortunate. But that's the reality of the situation. I mean, Raider fans act like they've been going to the playoffs for 20 years in a row. It's hilarious. It's hilarious. Last time they went to pass a wild card game was 0-2, and I was there. I mean, have some perspective. Last night they never brought up, during the entire broadcast, they never bring up the fact that half the Raiders' first-round picks aren't even on the team anymore.
Mm, yeah. Yeah, you know, that's Mike Mayock, right? That's not even
that was
what's
all
going
Mayock.
On now.
He got him. The best player he picked was Crosby, and thank God he picked him. If he didn't have, they didn't have Crosby, what would they have? Now, look, they got to assume the responsibility. And Garoppolo, to me, you know, he didn't want to get – he was seeing ghosts. It was clear as could be. I actually thought McDaniels would have to pull him. I mean, they were as bad as it was, Stormy, they're in the game.
Mm-hmm.
He completes the 90-yard touchdown pass, and it's guys wide. I mean, Adams is wide open. So when everybody starts throwing this stuff around, well, you know, he had one catch. Well, whose fault is it? Whose fault that he only had one catch? Is it McDaniels, or is it the execution of the offense? I think it's the execution of the offense. Now, that falls on McDaniels' plate, too. But, like, let's not pretend that he's not getting the ball thrown to him. Come on. These narratives are ridiculous.
No, they were thrown near him. I don't know if they were thrown to him. Again, that's not his fault. Like, Jimmy G, what's frustrating for, I'm sure, Raiders fans watching him is that he's either hurt and not on the field, or he's on the field and blatantly missing high, low, or just turning it over. And it's a recipe for disaster no matter what you do. And you said it, yes, he is getting hit a lot. The third down protection was not good. But so much of that is on his plate, and I don't know if it is just because he's worried about his back or whatever, but it looks bad. They end up losing 26-14 in Detroit. So with that, we talk about Davante Adams, Michael. He threw his helmet down on the ground in frustration. Here's him post game, just not really wanting to say anything because he get himself in trouble.
I honestly don't know what to say at this moment. I truly don't. I wish I had the words to say something that's not going to get blown up in the media and taken out of context. So I'm going to just, I just don't know.
What are you feeling right now? Can you elaborate on anything going through your mind?
Frustration, but I mean, that kind of goes without saying.
Davante, I know you said that, you know, you have confidence whenever you're out there and your offense's ability, but is it kind of hard to maintain that when the results are what they've been?
No, it's not hard to maintain the confidence in our offense. It's just hard to curb your frustration when you can't put it together when you know you should.
Yeah, and frustration, I think, is a perfect word that he and I'm sure a lot of people are experiencing.
I mean, I'm rooting for the Raiders. I'm frustrated. I'm upset. I mean, you know, like, look, It's unfortunate because, you know, you're sitting there and you're not as talented as the Lions, but you're sitting there right in that game. You get the turnover. The defense played their tail off. I mean, they created turnovers. They scored a touchdown. And you can't complete a simple high school pass. I mean, a simple high school pass. You know, they came out and tried to throw the ball. Everybody was critical. They were throwing the ball. That was the best they've run blocked the entire game. the entire season. You know, they had some things going, but when you got a chance to hit a deep ball, this is in high school. You got to hit that. You can't miss that throw, you know? And it was at the point of the game where it was getting a little, had they gotten that play, you know, now you're only down by six. You need a stop and you win. So, look, that's what happens when you lose. There's always five or six plays that don't go your way. And what does that tell you? It tells you you're not good enough, right? It tells you you're not good enough. And the reality of it is they're not good enough. They don't make the plays when they need to make them at the most critical time. And unfortunately, they pay a price for it. They're sitting there in the game. As bad as the numbers looked from a statistical standpoint, they're sitting right there in the game.
Yeah, Michael. And on the flip side of that, we were talking yesterday previewing this game about like, how is this Raiders money coming in? We just didn't see it. And it ends up obviously falling the Lions' way. But Raiders were in it. I thought if not win, like there were multiple opportunities for them to at least get the cover from that standpoint. And obviously it doesn't come through. We did get our first half bet on the Lions through, which is a little bit fortunate, actually. Credit Sam Laporta for getting that touchdown for us before halftime. But let's talk about the Lions side of things here, Michael, because after the blowout embarrassing loss that they took to Baltimore, an important bounce back for them as well.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure. To me, I was disappointed in their play. Like, okay. I know they're missing some offensive linemen. I know they are. But they weren't. Gibbs was great, and everybody runs the ball on the Raiders. I didn't think Goff was sharp, you know, and their red zone was horrendous.
Yeah.
Their red zone was not good enough. I mean, the game shouldn't have been as close if it was the red zone, you know, and they never really were threatened by the Raiders when you think about it. I mean, you know, they were never really challenged. I mean, they didn't punt in the second half. So that tells you all, they only have one punt in the entire game, but they kick five field goals. So, and then they miss one. And so I think to me, you know, they had the ball for almost 40 minutes in the game, Stormy, you know, and they scored 26 points. They dominated the game, but they couldn't get the ball in the end zone. And I think to me, they're going to go against a lot better teams. And that pass defense that we saw isn't as good as we think it is in terms of what the Raiders did, because the Raiders have ample opportunity. You watch the tape. Here's guys open. They just don't throw it to them.
Yeah, that's an interesting team, I think, Detroit, to keep an eye on. Who are they really going to be? Because there's ample opportunity in the NFC this year, especially with the San Francisco 49ers taking a step back. The Eagles keep winning games, but they still don't look like the Eagles we saw a season ago. So Detroit, with the schedule that they have ahead, I'm sure hoping to try to make a run at that top seed. But if they're not playing to their caliber and not overcoming some of these injuries, what are we going to get? We got a lot more injuries that we need to update you on as well across the NFL. Stay with us here on the Lombardi Line on this NFL Trade Deadline Day.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. You'll get a daily email recapping all the best bets from our show hosts and guests. You also get unlimited access to our VSiN.com/picks page. Sort picks by sport, matchup, event date, and more. You can also check on the top VSiN experts leaderboard to view betting records, profit, and ROI. You can see which VSiN expert has the hot hand. For VSiN Pro picks, betting splits, betting guides, plus 24/7 video access, become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. Sign up now and get access to everything we do through May 1st. Only $120 at VSiN.com/subscribe. We are rolling along here, 2.5 hours away from that 4 p.m. Eastern NFL trade deadline. No new news to update you on as of right now, with the exception of Montez Sweat going to the Chicago Bears for a second. The biggest trade of the day, still James Harden to the Clippers in the NBA. Classic on that standpoint. But Michael, let's get into some news and notes, NFL injury updates for the folks at home, starting with Matt Stafford for the Los Angeles Rams. Has a UCL sprain in his right thumb, so listed as day-to-day right now. The injury suffered in the rough loss to the Dallas Cowboys this past week, his thumb looked like it got stuck in the helmet of a defensive lineman. So raises the question of, if he goes this coming weekend against the Packers at all, how will that impact him? He came back into the game for a little while. Brett Rippon still ended up having to finish the game, but they've got the Packers this week, getting 3 on the road.
And they brought in back John Wolford, who was once with them and actually started a playoff game up in Seattle. I think that was a playoff game. Remember, he got hurt and then they had to bring Goff back in off the bench. This is when they were going through their "we don't like Goff" period in Los Angeles. And they had to bring Wolford in, and then Wolford got hurt. So he knows the offense. I mean, look, whoever plays quarterback for the Rams is going to be in a dangerous spot because he's going to get hit and he's going to get hurt. I think what we see a lot, we saw it at the Raider game last night, is these quarterbacks that get hit so much, Mac Jones, and they're, what people don't realize, they become like boxers. Their eye level comes down, and they start reacting to punches that aren't even thrown, and they start to hurry themselves because they're just afraid they're going to get hit. Not afraid of not being competitively tough, but just afraid of protecting their body.
Like, and phantom, I think that's pressure, right?
Exactly. That's what was going on last night. You know, he just was, you know, he's not fearful of something. He's just, he's protecting his body. And so he's getting rid of the ball. There's no patience to him. There's no confidence in his mechanics. So it's the same thing with Stafford. Because you get hit so much, you know, it's the body punches. That's where you go. And I think that, you know, I would be shocked if Stafford, they're going up to Green Bay. Look, it got cold. All of a sudden, yesterday I drove home, it was 74 degrees here. Today I come into work, it's 52. So though I can imagine Green Bay is not going to be tropical, which makes it problematic for a UCL injury, a sprain on your thumb, hard to grip those balls that tend to get a little tighter when the cold weather comes in. And plus, for what, and look, I've been saying this for too long, but the Packers should be able to rush the passer against this bad offensive line of the Rams, which doesn't bode well for Stafford.
Yeah, and it seems like lately we're starting to get some of the results that we anticipated coming into this game, with the Rams being a lower level team. Like, they start off the season with a win. They play the 49ers and Bengals tough, beat the Colts. And now here we are 3-5, and the injuries are starting to mount up, and it feels like an uphill battle. But it's not like the Packers on the other side are something to write home about with the level of success they've had. What did you make of just this line in general, outside of just the cold element?
You know, I was shocked by it. I really was. In fact, this morning when I typed it in, so every morning when I get up, I go through all the lines, and today's the color, I kind of have an off color of red, and I just can't believe it. I'm like, how did anybody think the Packers can be a favorite? You know, I mean, how could I wrote in here, how could the Packers be a 3-point favorite against anyone the way they're playing?
Exactly.
Of course, this is coming off an evening spending it with Big Daddy on the couch while we're watching the Raider game, and he's ripping every draft pick ever known to mankind by the Packers. So I might have had that in my mind when I woke up this morning. But that being said, like, the Packers can't score. I mean, they can't score. They can't throw the football effectively. And, you know, I know this is LaFleur against his mentor in McVay, but I just don't see how this is going to be a good situation. They go out there. I mean, the one thing the Rams can do is, you know, we saw them get an opening drive. They can start the game fairly quickly. Problem is, they can't protect. But, you know, if they can run the ball, which they ran the ball on Pittsburgh, they were in that game. They ran the ball in Arizona, they won that game, right? They ran the ball against the Colts, they won that game. If when they can run the ball, they're a better offense. And teams run the ball on Green Bay.
Yep, and the turnovers continue to be an issue as well for their young quarterback. Another young quarterback that we're going to see for the first time, it appears, this coming week, Clayton Toon, the rookie out of Houston. Jonathan Gannon going to give him the reins in Arizona this week, in Cleveland, rather, for Arizona. Cardinals getting 8 in this spot, but after apparently grinding the film on Josh Dobbs after week 8 against the Ravens, said, okay, we're gonna give the young guy a shot here.
Well, I mean, look, he threw almost 60 passes in the preseason, right? So he had a lot of experience this summer. But as we've seen from we've seen from Aiden O'Connell, we've seen from Dorian Robinson-Thompson, right? You know, that preseason is meaningless. This kid didn't have an elite preseason. He averaged 6 points yards per attempt. He threw a touchdown and he had an interception. So, but he, you know, he'll go in there. Can he move against a really good front of Cleveland? Yeah. I mean, this line shocks me too. Cleveland, without naming who their starting quarterback is, this line jumped up to 8.5. How is Cleveland better than anybody 8.5 if PJ Walker plays quarterback? You know, I mean, how are they better than anybody?
Michael,
I don't understand that one.
Michael, is the Browns ceiling higher with PJ Walker or Deshaun Watson based on what you've seen? I'm asking that question kind of in jest, but also kind of seriously.
Okay, so we just got a big trade in.
Okay.
The Vikings are trading for Josh Dobbs, And I don't know what they gave up, but this is coming from Ian Rappaport.
That's the truth behind the Clayton Toon move then, with Josh Dobbs moving on. There we go. Yep. It's all coming together now.
It's all coming back to me now. We're like, you're like Celine Dion over there, right? Huh? I mean, that's beautiful. Josh Dobbs, it'll be his third team. Poor kid's moved a lot.
Yep.
Look, I mean, obviously, now it's Clayton Toon's team. Who's the backup, Stormy? Who's going to be the backup?
I got to pull up. Well, would Kyler Murray be the backup now, just in case they need him, because he's fully healthy?
If you're going to let him dress to be the backup, he's never backed up anybody in his life. Right? They don't have a quarterback on their practice squad that's a backup, right? Wow. So they'd have to go sign somebody.
Interesting. I'm trying to figure out what's still going to happen with Kyler Murray at this point, because if he's fully healthy, he's practicing in full. Is this all like, and we've talked so much about the contract element of this thing and how it not shouldn't even you, why even go out there and put him on the field? But if they think that he's going to be the guy of the future, then all right, let's kind of get this team together and see if your attitude and maturity and mentality toward playing football for this organization has changed. I'm curious your thoughts on that though, because
I would play Toon and just get the first pick in the draft and leave Murray over there on the shelf and make a decision.
Yeah.
But I think this Dobbs trade, let's go the Minnesota direction, right? I think this Dobbs trade tells us that, you know, Minnesota, why would they trade Hunter now? If you're going to bring Dobbs in, not that Dobbs is going to lead you to the playoffs, I get that, but you're not tanking the season, right? You're bringing in somebody to kind of help you along here.
Are you surprised it's Dobbs?
Yeah, I thought Dobbs, like, I'm surprised Arizona got rid of Dobbs. He knew their offense. You know, he was playing, look, he wasn't, I got to say this, he was playing better than Mac Jones has played at times during the season.
Yeah, well, I asked the question just because there were all those rumors about Jameis Winston potentially coming in and that the Vikings weren't going to sell. They were going to go from that standpoint. But Dobbs seems like an interesting choice in my mind.
It really is. I mean, I'm surprised the Saints don't sell on Winston. Like, they don't play him. He's not really the backup, because they would just play Taysom Hill, right?
Yeah.
So, like, why don't they just sell? Like, why? I don't know why Winston isn't over there saying, like, get me out of here. Let me go somewhere I can be a good player. I'll go to Las Vegas. I'll go somewhere.
Go somewhere I can play and not just have to sit on the sideline and watch check down after check down. That's all I ask of you, New Orleans, please. Also, it appears Tyson Bagent will get the start once again for Justin Fields for the Bears, who we referenced earlier.
But Sweat's going to get six sacks and win them the game. Don't worry about it. They'll take care of their defensive problems.
That's all I was going to say was, and as a reminder, on this trade deadline, they give up a second round pick for Montez Sweat. So there we go. Will he play this week?
Oh, yeah. It's easy to
just
get him
go
in.
Right
he's
in.
Gonna, you know, in that defense, he's a wide nine. Just run up the field. Run past the quarterback as much as you like. They don't care.
All right. We got to step aside here. When we come back, our first spooky segment of the day, Michael, get excited. It's our haunted house. We're going to talk through which NFL division leaders might have ghosts creeping up. So it's kind of like a confidence meter. Which division leader should be scared? Let's put it that way. We're going to go to the haunted house when we return here on the Lombardi Line. Stay with us. You're listening to VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Don't forget, on DraftKings Sportsbook this week, new customers can bet $5 and pocket $200 in bonus bets instantly. Plus, all customers can get a no-sweat same-game parlay every day. Download the app and use the promo code VEGAS when you sign up. DraftKings Sportsbook, the crown is yours. alongside former NFL executive Michael Lombardi, Stormy Bonantoni with you as we begin the first of three different spooky segments here on this Halloween Tuesday edition of the Lombardi Line. So later on in the program, we're going to look at a futures graveyard. Which of our futures from the preseason are either going to be dead and buried or still have a chance to stay alive, as well as week nine NFL favorites, taking a look at which are tricks, which are treats. But for now, we're going to go to the haunted houses, Michael, and we're going to take a look at a number of these division favorites. And I want you to tell me if this division favorite's house is haunted and that there are some ghosts creeping up in the background that are going to knock them off the pedestal. Or if they've got it locked up. So let's start in the AFC East. The Miami Dolphins are 6-2. They're coming off a bounce back critical win against the New England Patriots, and odds on -195 favorite in the AFC East, Michael. But could the Dolphins' house be haunted? Is there another bet on the board that could be worth pursuing, the Bills, Jets, and Patriots in tow?
There's really only one, and that's the Bills. And I don't love their team based on the injury level that's going on, but you know, the Dolphins still haven't beaten a team with a winning record since September of last year. This will be a challenge against Kansas City and Germany to see if they can do that, particularly because Kansas City sets up perfectly for how to attack the Dolphins. I mean, last week, if you watch that tape closely, you know, New England did a pretty good job against them. Actually, I think they had better control of the game in Miami than they actually did in New England. Most people would say the opposite. But there was a couple calls that went against them that were strange calls nonetheless that helped Miami score points. Again, not they're the better team. I'm not defending that at all. I'm just saying they had a better control. They couldn't run the ball at all against New England. People are taking away that outside zone play pretty well now. So, you know, I still think with Josh Allen, you always have a chance. It's worth a play. I don't like it. I don't think their house is haunted in terms of holding on to the East for Miami, because their defense is starting to look better.
Okay, if you were to want to take a flyer on the bets, +240. But okay, the AFC East still firmly in the hands of the Miami Dolphins. Can they hold on to it and not let the ghosts of the Buffalo Bills take over? How about in the AFC North? Tough, tough division right now. Could the Ravens' house be haunted? I think yes, considering the Steelers, Browns, and Bengals all sitting there at 4-3. The Bengals had such a rough start to the year. Joe Burrow's looking better than ever right now. Could they be worth a play down there at 3-1?
You know, I think Cincy really was good last week. Defensively, they were good. You know, the offensively, they, you know, with Burrow like Allen, you always have a chance. I worry a little bit about Cincy. Can they be good enough? I mean, look, they give up, they're 30th in the league in terms of yards per attempt. They play better defense against San Francisco, but really, the reality of that game last week wasn't that San Francisco couldn't move the ball. San Francisco was playing from behind. Mm. That was the killer. And when you play from behind, it's so difficult. I mean, when you look at those things, it, you know, what San Francisco did last year, what Philly did last year, what Kansas City did last year is they play constantly from in front. And when you do that, you can run the ball, you can control the pace of the game. San Francisco, the last 3 weeks, haven't done it.
The Jacksonville Jaguars are a $5 favorite in the AFC South. Texans recently just lost to the worst team in the league in the Carolina Panthers. Titans, could they be turning it around with Will Levis at quarterback, or will he be figured out, similar to how C.J. Stroud has been, it seems? And the Colts playing teams close despite all of the turnover issues and Gardner Minshew at quarterback. Could the Jags' house be haunted, or do they have it locked up at 6-2 and the league's longest active win streak right now?
You know, I would have said the Titans have a chance. I mean, Levis made some really good deep throws, and for the last 3 weeks, the Titans have looked better in the offensive line and have run the ball. Where I'm concerned about the Titans is really where I'm typically not concerned, is they haven't played the run at all. You know, they have not played the run. Even though they only give up 3.8, the last 3 weeks, the Colts ran for 193. The Ravens ran for 139. The Falcons ran for 140. You know, they're not good enough in their secondary. We know they have problems at corner and inside. If for them, if you can run the ball on them, and if you can pass protect, which, you know, some teams can do with Simmons and Tart and Landry coming off the edge, I think it's certainly you can move the ball. I just don't know if Tennessee has enough to beat Jacksonville. I think Jacksonville's playing really well right now.
In the AFC West, the Kansas City Chiefs, another big favorite, $6 favorite in the division. And they just lost, though, to the Denver Broncos. And, I mean, Patrick Mahomes, I know he's dealing with an illness, but multiple turnovers, did not look himself. That offense struggling from the wide receiver position as well. Could their house be haunted in the AFC West with the Chargers playing better football of late?
I don't think it is, but let's just go through the Chiefs for just a second, right? They're 6-2. They're 6-2, which is outstanding. Mahomes has his lowest TD percentage of his career. He's got his highest interception percentage. He's got his lowest success rate of his career. His lowest adjusted air yards of his career. His yards per completion at 10.8 is the lowest of his career. His lowest passing yards per game and his lowest quarterback QBR. All that being said, he's still having his best. He's still got him 6-2. And three of his worst games, if you look at the 88 games he started, Stormy, you know, and you break them down from top to bottom, one being top, 88 being bottom. This season has produced his 87th, his 84th, and his 77th worst game of his career. Think about that now.
Wow.
Right? And so he hasn't played well. And a lot of it isn't on him, though, because when you break down his percentage of bad throws, the lowest in his career at 10.8. On target, the highest of his career, 82.3. But the problem is the drop rate of these receivers is 7.8. And he's been hit 35 times in 8 games. He's getting hit way too much. And people are no longer scared to pressure him. He's at a 23.7 pressure rate, which is the highest of his career. And so no one's scared about going after him. I mean, he only got hit 56 times last year. They played 8 games. He's already been hit 35.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit of a difference, you know. And I think when you look at it, the one thing you got to say is their scoring is way down. If you take out the aberration game of Chicago, they basically score 20.8 points a game. Last year, they're at 29.
So despite being 6-2, should they be scared potentially by anyone creeping up?
No,
because
I think these numbers are just how good he is. Like, he'll continue. He'll eventually, that drop rate's going to come down. Right? I mean, right now it's the highest it's ever been at 7.8. The receiver's dropping the ball. But as long as he stays on target, you know, I think he needs more help. I think that's the moral of my story is everybody thinks he's playing poorly, but I think a lot of it is a supporting cast. I mean, we thought Tyreek Hill losing him was going to affect him. It didn't as much last year, but it sure as hell affected him this year. I mean, last year they averaged, last year they were averaging 12.0 yards per catch. This year, that number's down to 10.8. Think about that. That's significant, right? That's just per catch. And his yards per attempt was 8.1. This year, he's down to 7.4.
And still a little bit of time before the trade deadline. See if there could potentially be something they could do to bolster that. And as they go to Germany this coming weekend, going to go head-to-head with Tyreek Hill out there in Germany. See the weapon that they lost. How about in the NFC East, the Eagles with the league's best record right now, 7-1, a $2 favorite, but the Cowboys playing better as of late. Is the Eagles' house haunted? Could Dallas come up in the wings?
Well, I think this is a big week, right? I mean, it's a 3-point game. I think a lot of this hauntedness is going to have to come back. Where is Hurts, right? Mm-hmm. Where does he sit in this whole equation? I mean, you know, the other issue is A.J. Brown's playing lights out. I mean, he's just playing, and who's guarding him? You know, the one thing about Dallas is, you know, when they play Philly, they can match up to Philly's offensive line. And their offensive line can match up to Philly's defensive line. So this game really comes down to this week, and it's a 3-point game. But Philly, for Dallas to win, they got to run the ball. They can't. I said it last Sunday. When Dak throws it 35 times or less, they're a good team. Last week, he threw it 31. They're a better team when he has balance in his run game. And it doesn't necessarily have to be 100 yards rushing. It has to be they have balance in their game. And I think ultimately Philly will win this thing, but Dallas will give him a good run.
Michael, we only have 30 seconds, but Seattle's actually the NFC West leader. San Francisco's still an odds-on favorite. Could Seattle make a push at this thing?
I think they could. I mean, look, they get Leonard Williams in there to help their defense. Geno Smith has to play to the level he played last year if they're going to do that. I think that's going to be critical. His accuracy is down this year.
Want to shout out our girl Michelle as well for all those graphics with the ghosts in each of the division, the haunted houses, so dang good. That was fun. And the music was, I was trying to like speak to the music a little bit, but it's kind of hard to speak spooky consistently. I'll see if I can do better later on in the show. We got to reset for hour two. Don't go anywhere. This is the Lombardi Line on VSiN.